Welcome to Amazon Legends, where we have real stories about making it big on Amazon. Our guests are CEOs of large companies and entrepreneurs who became power sellers. Also providers specializing in helping sellers, aggregators that acquire sellers, and former Amazonians will give us an insight from behind the scenes. Here is your host, Nick Urison.
Welcome to another episode of Amazon Legends. My next guest today is a former Amazonian, and he's worked there for several years, working in different positions. And in fact, one of those was in policymaking. So he's probably responsible for some of the things that most sellers complain about today. So today, he's the strategy manager at Nuance Media, which is a full-service Amazon agency. He's also known as Mr. Fix-It, especially when it comes to Amazon and Seller Central. So he gained that title because he worked in so many different departments at Amazon, so he has a pretty good handle. And when he's not working, he spends time renovating his home, repairs, and as you can imagine, anything to do with fixing things. So he wants to live up to his title. So with that, everybody, meet my guest, Patrick Hanna. Welcome to the show, Pat.
Hey, thanks for having me, Nick. Appreciate it. Good to be here.
I always enjoy having Amazonians, you know. So far, I don't know how many I had on the show. It's quite a few, but you guys have a different language, different way of approaching things. So it's quite a school, Amazon, right?
It gets absolutely. It's like picking up a second college degree, master's degree, PhD for some that stay there for 10 plus years.
It's quite a freaking brainwashing machine. Everybody talks the same way. I mean, it's all methodical, you know, very disciplined. So it's all good. I enjoy it. And you know, another thing that all Amazonians have same thing in common is smart. You know, people are smart, and I guess in order to survive in an environment like Amazon, you have to be. So
yeah, absolutely, 100%. Accurate statement there, for sure. A lot of smart people over there.
So since you are Mr. Fix-It, and things always break with Amazon, so everybody, what we're going to talk about today is, since we have Pat here, we're going to put him up to the hardest things that we come across in Seller Central when we're trying to do things. So he's going to tell us the shortcuts, the methodology, interpretation, and how basically we can go about fixing things that we're trying to get done and seller support is not responding and it's becoming a pain in the neck. And of course, it causes us to lose money. So he's going to give us the methodology. I've got a laundry list of things here that I'm going to go through. So stay tuned. I have here about 8-9 different things. So we're going to go through every single one of these. And I think I've got a pretty good list. I'm sure there'll be more coming up as we get into the discussion. So let's start with one that comes up all the time. You have a listing, parent-child relationships, and we have colors and sizes and whatever. And suddenly we decide that we want to bring a new variation, but we want to fix the attributes because it's not going to work. So tell us the best way to go about it.
Well, so I think the very best way, and I'm assuming a lot of your viewers know, using a feed or AKA a flat file, an Excel file to reconcile and try to troubleshoot via the back end is probably the most efficient method. Using those files can be rather tricky. I know a lot of people have problems getting those right. It's a very complex kind of intricate process where you have to get all of the attributes filled out appropriately. And if you make a mistake on one, you know, it can get rejected and you can get those error messages that are very tedious to fix. It, in itself, it can be very troublesome using those, but I would recommend, you know, using flat files and getting that in terms of, or starting there in terms of trying to resolve pesky issues. I know a lot of, you know, problems regarding certain attributes will require, or at least seller support will tell you that you have to delete your ASIN for 24 hours, wait for the system to, I guess, flush its cache. I'll use that as the terminology. And then re-upload it as a full update on that attribute file in order to change some of those pesky attributes. Like, for example, title. Sometimes that requires the 24-hour delete, wait, and then re-upload it, but making sure that it's a full update, not a partial update. And when doing that, you need to make sure that you have your complete set of attributes already on hand before you even delete the ASIN. So you got to make sure you got images load up, all of your, you know, sizing, dimensions, ingredients. I would have the whole thing wrapped up nicely onto a flat file so that within 24 hours, you're ready to go, put it in there, and hopefully it works, right? So for some of the issues that you're just not able to resolve, right, that then you go to seller support, right? That's the next line of action. Or, you know, Amazon, like, you know, think about Amazonians, right? Plan of action. They definitely live that philosophy, right? So what happened? What's the problem? What have you done thus far to fix the issue? And, you know, what is the perceived or the desired results going forward? So opening up a case with seller support is going to be your next step to see if you can get some of these attributes fixed, right? That just don't seem to update. Usually the 24-hour delete with the full update, you know, can help. But sometimes it just doesn't work, right? So escalating internally through Seller Central, and maybe this isn't even an attribute that we're talking about. And I think this is probably on your list, Nick, and I don't want to jump ahead, but, you know, we'll get into some of the philosophy of working with the seller support agent here in a moment. But in terms of your more specific example of updating pesky attributes, right?
So let me jump in here, because what I want to do is to you and me, and these are natural things, but, you know, a lot of sellers. So by the way, I was doing a little research the other day and I came across these statistics about how many sellers are there on Amazon, third-party sellers, and how much revenue do they generate. So what I found was there are only 1.1 million active sellers.
Okay, interesting.
Active means a seller that sold at least one piece in the last 90 days.
Okay.
Out of that 1.1 million, 79% do less than $1 million a year. So what we're talking about is a huge number of sellers that really do things manually.
Right.
They don't
right.
have agencies. They don't understand flat files. They just go log into Seller Central, create their listing and ASIN and whatever. So but you and I don't operate that way, right? We use flat files. So I want to first flush this out in a way that people can know exactly what to do. So first of all, tell us, how can someone who created a listing manually obtain the flat file, the template that is exactly for their listing?
Yeah, so, you know, that would be found within Seller Central, and it's under the, if you want specifics, right, then you would have to go to the inventory menu, and then I believe it's under upload an item via catalog upload, I believe. I have to double check, but it's upload your item. I have to actually double check that here. It's under catalog, and then add products via upload. From there, it's going to guide you to finding the Excel file that you need, which is based on your category. And then of those columns, right, it's going to have the various attributes from title to price, the bullet points, product description, images, so on and so forth. The Excel spreadsheet has a series of tabs at the bottom, and there are some very useful information. So certain fields, certain columns are delineated by only, you know, choice selections. Like, you cannot manipulate certain fields, right? So you have to look at data definitions and ensure that you're plugging in the right information that is allowed on that particular cell. So this, I don't want to get too complex with it, but that is where you would find a flat file to essentially, you're kind of taking it in the back end approach. You know, a lot of these sellers that you're referring to will go to the inventory and then they'll hit the edit button and try to make the update on the front end, which is a perfectly fine thing to do. It's just sometimes I think if Seller Central or the back end of Amazon is like hitting an old TV, right? And you're trying to get it to work. Or if you've ever watched, I don't know, Stranger Things, it's like working in the upside down, right? Like, the system has a mind of its own. To me, I think the back end essentially is built on a house of cards in a way that, you know, if you think about it, how fast Amazon has accelerated and how many coders and software devs have come in and added to this, you know, amalgamation of a very complex system. You know, you're going to run into a lot of anomalies that, you know, every seller comes across, right? So with that being said, certainly trying it from the front end is definitely step one, right? Trying to go to the edit button, trying to make your attribute update there. And then if that doesn't work, contact seller support to see if you can get some assistance. My recommendation, I think, is for sellers to eventually try to take on the task of learning how to use flat files, because it is advantageous in the long run to utilize those to really fix a lot of issues. Because at some point, seller support may end up telling you if something's not updating that you have to re-upload it via one of those flat files. So I'm sure there's a ton of, you know, information out on the internet that you can learn how to do that. But, you know, if all else fails, we can get into a little bit more about how to finesse and speak with seller support and then further escalation techniques that, you know, you can use to help resolve some of these other more complex issues, maybe outside of attributes, but you know, some of the weird stuff we see come across.
Now, the other thing that I always recommend people is every time you're uploading a file, yeah, whether it's partial update or full update, doesn't matter, save that file. So I always give it a version number, V1, V2, V3, V4. So because you may need to revert back and you don't want to have to go hunting for what was what after the fact. So every single submission has to be kept with a different name as a version number. So that way you can go back and look at what you submitted, because they'll come back and, you know, it will show feed processing summary and it's going to show errors. And then you're going to have to go back. They do provide the information, but it's never really best to rely on that. The other thing that I noticed is, let's say, for example, you genuinely have submitted something wrong and it's just one column that has the wrong information. Like, for example, you're supposed to put count or pieces or whatever, and then you didn't do that. It's just one error, but it throws back three errors, four errors, right? Because not having that one thing leads to another thing. So don't trust what you read in the feed processing summary in terms of number of errors. There is probably only one, and that you can see as something missing or wrong. And don't try to look for the other two or three, because fix the one that you know and then submit. There's no harm in submitting several times. So would you agree?
I would agree. And I believe also in the, you know, where I just directed folks to go under catalog and then upload via add products via upload. I believe now they do have like a preliminary check where you can kind of run it and see if you will get errors. That's one option. But yeah, if you wanted to just straight up try to upload it, and if you do have errors, then there is no necessarily harm in that because it won't make changes until you correct all of the errors. So yeah, I've been in front of the computer where it's back and forth and I have like 100 versions, not 100, but you know, maybe I have 10 versions. And then finally that 10th version works, right? So yeah, you start with a minimal set of data and then you expand on that based on what the computer wants, the system wants, right?
Yeah.
I will say, you know, if you are looking for some feed support, some of this Excel file support, and you are trying to get assistance from Amazon with this, you know, learning how to do it, I would recommend trying to get on the phone with seller support and asking for somebody in the catalog team. And generally, you know, you can get somebody on the phone. If you're lucky, you know, Amazon seller support, sometimes you got to find somebody that's capable, and that's part of the puzzle, right? There are obviously, you know, capable folks over there. There are people that, you know, as you've seen, submit these rinse and repeat templated responses. But, you know, if you can get on the phone with somebody from the catalog team, you know, sometimes those folks can actually help you, you know, correct any errors on your feed and kind of walk you through some of the steps that you need to take. So, you know, one thing is I think a lot of sellers, they rely on email communications, you know, create a case, email, wait. But those email responses are generally never very fruitful, right? When I want to get something resolved or if I need help, I try to get somebody on the line and I try to find somebody that's willing to help me. And I found more success with trying to get somebody on the phone instead of waiting for an email response to be what I want. I always recommend trying to get on the phone. You know, let them do their job while they're on the phone. You know, they'll put you on a silent hold for a few minutes. You know, have something to work on the side, you know, while you're waiting. Just let them do their business. And a lot of the times I find more success when I, you know, can work with somebody on the phone live.
Yeah, I agree. What I usually do is I put all the details into the ticket.
Yeah.
And then call, you know, select the call option or call right. back option. Call back immediately, they call back. But when they do pick up the call, I tell them, please take a look at the information I submitted. I'll wait. Don't worry. You read it, and then any questions, I'm here. So that way, I don't have to repeat myself and leave things out. I give it enough thought to put down exactly what I've done, what I'm trying to do, and blah, blah, what is not working. And then, you know, let them read it. And then they'll usually come back and say, okay, I need to contact the catalog department or catalog team or whatever. And they come back. And you're right. I had an issue where we were trying to switch the variation theme.
Right.
So the column that needed to have the theme values had to be replaced. Right. Values had to be replaced according to the new variation theme. And it just would reject. It would say there's something else there. We cannot put it.
Right.
So try and try and try and try. It changed the theme, but it just wouldn't change the values because there was something else. So what happened in the end was I did get somebody on the phone and she said to me that you have to submit the old stuff back in
Right. Okay.
Now you're laughing. And so you have to do the wrong thing first
Yeah. I know.
and then
Crazy.
replace with the new thing altogether at this, and then wait for 24 hours and then delete, wait 24 hours, and then come back and submit everything with the new value. So and I said, well, this makes no sense. Well, she says, well, you got to do the wrong thing first in order to do the right thing next. So that's the way the system works.
I know,
So
yeah, it's insane, right? It doesn't quite make sense, and there's a lot of trial and error, and that's an interesting case, I guess. Yeah, and on that note, sometimes attributes on the back end change, or they make category updates, and then flat files, these files, their columns will change, and so sometimes you can't update old attributes that might be shown on the detail page because they're no longer available on the new flat file. So I know, like, if you have that old flat file and you want to try to update, let's just say it's, I don't know, color, and no longer on the new flat file is color. You may be able to use that old flat file if you have it handy, but that's when, you'd have to get seller support involved to try to have them help you with that. But yeah, it's quite complex, messy. Like I said, man, it's hitting that TV to get it to work.
Let's talk about updating images, because this is another thing that I find frustrating. So there are three ways to add images for
Right.
a list. First of all, you go into the front end and log into Seller Central and go to edit on the listing and then add the images. So that's one. The second place is in the flat file, you submit the URLs and then you can have up to 12, and then you submit those. And then the third place, now they have something called Image Manager. And when you go to Image Manager, you have to name the images specifically according to a naming convention. You have to put the ASIN and then the code that they have in terms of side, front, or whatever. So you have to put the code in. So these are the three ways to update images. I have tried all three and my images still don't show up. So tell me why that happens and how to deal with that.
Yeah, good call out. Images have been quite a pesky thing for some of my clients as well lately. So one thing that you might want to check to make sure that your main image is at least 1,000 by 1,000, the minimum spec requirements. So I know, like, I've had the same issue where I'm like, why aren't the images updating? And for some reason, I had like a 1,000 by 500 pixels in the main image, and it won't tell you sometimes in the system. And then you'll talk to seller support and they might point it out for you. And sure enough, when I made the image bigger, to meet the requirements, it worked, right? So it could be like some strange little thing where you just have to make sure, your main image meets requirements. I would say that may be one of the big things to investigate when images don't update, is look at your main image. And are there any issues with it? So I mentioned dimensions, easy one to fix. Another one is, as you've seen on Amazon, a lot of sellers are trying to, use backgrounds in their images, use lifestyle imagery, like using human models or, hands holding up bottles, right? Things like that to really make your main image pop out from the rest of the crew. Amazon's been kind of lenient about that. As you know, the policy is clear white background. But we've seen a lot of sellers, especially in beauty. Go to beauty and you'll see pictures of lips, makeup, eyeliner, of actual eyes on there. And it looks great. But I've seen a crackdown on Amazon on some of these sellers where it seems like they opened up the gate, got lenient, but now it seems like they're closing the gate on the flexibility of using something with not a white background. So that could be it. There could be an issue with the system detecting that you don't have a white background. That's another thing. And oftentimes if you do submit a case to seller support, they may, you know, lend you a clue. In your circumstance, I'm sure you tried. I don't know if they provided you any useful information or suggestions on how to fix your things, but those are a couple of things that I can think of. Is it's something wrong with the main image that's preventing a successful upload. Now, if you want me to get into like the image uploading tool that they have, I think that one is good for if you are trying to organize catalogs across marketplaces. That can be a beneficial tool if you're trying to manipulate images in one spot, you know, across the EU marketplaces, US, you're selling in Asia, etc. For example, the US is your main kind of for images is the main marketplace. If you change images there, they oftentimes will update if you have the same ASIN in Germany. And so you might have German images that you want to use with German language, but if you update your ASIN, if you're sharing the same ASIN, the US imagery often trumps the rest of the world, right? In terms of what's going to be displayed. So that image upload tool is a good way to try to get specific marketplace imagery to showcase instead of the US.
So what is your favorite or preferred way, least hassle-free, to update your images?
I mean, I like to go to edit and then drag them and drop and hit the save button. That's obviously, I think, where everybody's going to go to do that first. I would recommend that. If that doesn't work, I would try flat file to force the update there. But I would also contact seller support if it's not updating within 24 hours. And I've had, you know, some success with them telling me what's wrong. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I've been seeing issues of them calling out images with non-white backgrounds. And then for whatever reasons, imagery with not meeting the requirements of the pixels, you know, the size, so those are just like the call outs that I've seen. And if worse comes to worse, right? And I think we're going to get into this. It's all about escalating and trying to get somebody that will actually help you.
So that's my next thing. So let's talk about that as far as some of the principles and how to escalate when things are not working and some of the terminology that you can refer to.
Some of the Amazonian the language, right? Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, you know, starting with your set of cases, let's just take this image example into play, right? You're doing everything, you're meeting the image requirements, just something is not working. You've submitted many cases, seller support has not helped you, right? You have a backlog of multiple cases. You've been there. Everybody's been there where you have 10 cases, 20 cases where you're trying to get somebody to solve the issue, but they can't, right? A lot of times these are more prominent issues. Perhaps your listing got taken down for a compliance issue and the seller support and the compliance team won't tell you what it is, right? You've been there where you're like, just tell me what the issue is and I'll fix it. But they have to be very careful about how they feed you information, right? Because they're trying to cover their end. But, you know, some of these more high level issues, you just can't get resolved. And you have a backlog. You've shown, you know, you have documentation of what you've tried to do. The next kind of steps I would recommend, you know, as I said, getting on the phone, right? With the seller support agent, you're on the phone or, you know, you're on email, right? The first escalation path, you know, I would take and I'd weave these leadership principles in there because Amazon is very, you know, they live and they breathe the leadership principles. If you don't know them, Google them. Some of the ones that I like to use, or you know, even in my everyday life, since I'm indoctrinated to the philosophy, would be taking a bias for action, meaning that, hey, can you help me, you know, tackle this issue? And can you be like customer obsessed, right? That's a huge leadership principle over there. Those are the two that I kind of try to weave in like an email. I'm always very kind to these representatives as well. Like, you know, kindness goes a long way and we're showing respect, right? So it's easy to get angry, but, you know, they're just doing their jobs. So, you know, leaning on these leadership principles and trying to craft them in your language, I think can really help them get into action and try to help resolve your issue.
Tell me the first one. What's the first one?
Yeah, so taking a bias for action. It's kind of like
taking a bias for action. I've never heard this one. This one is new. Taking a bias for action.
Taking a bias for action. Yeah. I like that one. I mean, when I was at Amazon, I was always taking a bias for action to, you know, get things done, right? There are so many common sense issues that you see, like, why is this happening? Like, can you not see how commonsensical the resolution to this problem is? Like, you know, can you take a bias for action to try to fix this when we see like there's an obvious path to resolution, right? The number one leadership principle is customer obsession. We're their customers, so yeah, I'd like you to take more customer-centric, obsessed approach.
So, you know, when I was a seller, I learned this. And maybe today it's a little bit better, but it's still the case. You are the third grade citizen if you are a seller, as far as Amazon is concerned. Customer comes first, and as a seller, you are worth nothing. Just get in line. And you are guilty before proving innocent, your innocence. That's how they look at you. If God forbid something went wrong, then you're guilty right from the get-go. So that's the way they seem to approach. So, I mean, this obviously aggravates the seller. So whatever you're trying to do, what I'm hearing from you about applying the customer obsession principle is explain to the agent or the support staff that this is going to ultimately hurt the Amazon customer. So therefore, help me fix this so that I can serve the Amazon customers better. Like wrapping it up in that sense, right?
Absolutely. Yes, that's another great way to position yourself. This is ultimately hurting the buyer on Amazon. My listing was taken down. You're not telling me why. We've been selling for years and all of a sudden this has happened. You know, this is affecting Amazon customer base, right? The buyers are no longer able to buy this item and it's been selling for millions of dollars on the platform for years. You know, classic scenario. Just one day to the next, something goes wrong. And then it's, you know, this huge fire for a seller, right? And it's significant if it's a high ticket or a fast moving product. It's not good. So like you said, yeah, proven guilty before or whatever. They got a system they follow. They have their algorithm that triggers things that it sees that might be harmful to their protecting Amazon's assets. I agree with that statement. Weave that in. Let's take a customer obsessed approach to both my situation and ultimately the buyer on Amazon.
As you know, Amazon often loses inventory or overcharges fees. With Arty, you can now recover up to 30% of your lost revenue at a monthly flat rate of only $99 with no commission fees for unlimited reimbursements. You can increase your bottom line. Their automated Amazon compliant process ensures hassle-free refunds. Visit www.getarty.com/legends and sign up today to get 1 month free and discover your recovery potential. So let's talk about also escalating to executives when everything fails. And in that context, tell us about pulling the end on cord. So explain to us.
So this is the good stuff here. Well, first, the end on cord, that I would, while you're talking to a seller support rep, email, maybe you're on chat, maybe even on the phone. The act of pulling an end on cord is if you are an associate at Amazon, and you need help as an associate, you don't know the path to resolution. As an associate, I would pull what's called an end on cord. And that is essentially an internal system. It's a, you know, computer software where I press a button, it says end on cord, and that'll flag a team lead or somebody from leadership to come help me figure out the problem at hand and find the path to resolution. So it's an internal way of saying, can you go get some help from a team lead or somebody that might have experience in this, you know, this with this issue? So again, using the terminology that they use, that's one of them. Can you please pull an end on cord? We discuss, you know, the meaning behind end on cord. If you're interested, it's an idea that Toyota originally came up with. They would literally pull an end on cord if there was a problem on the production assembly line to stop everything, investigate the issue, and then resolve it before they got back to production, right? In the sense with seller support, it's just essentially them pressing a button on their screen. They're putting a pause on their research to find resolution with a team lead, basically. So that's part of the steps to escalate with seller support. You know, the last thing you can try, one of the things is you can ask for a supervisor's callback. Generally, they won't get a supervisor these days on the phone for you immediately. But if you ask kindly enough and you're persistent, you can get supervisors to call you back. Usually it's within 4 hours. I've seen success with that. And sometimes, you know, the supervisors can help. You can get somebody on the line that's been at Amazon for years that can be very helpful to you, at least provide you with insight and what you can do with the next steps. Now, the juicy stuff is escalating to the executive, right? It's a known thing, I think, out there. I'm sure people have talked about it and people do it all the time. But, you know, there's a tactic and a strategy on escalating to essentially writing Jeff Bezos an email. And right now we have Andy Jassy in the main chair, right? He's actually the CEO, but Jeff Bezos still maintains an email address there, right? He's on the board. So people still write to him. You know, there's companies out there that solely deal with escalating to executives with these really big issues like what I just brought up. ASIN down, making millions of dollars a year from one day to the next, and I cannot figure out why, and I need help. So writing a carefully constructed email to Jeff or Andy, there are a few other executives, but those are the two, you know, that are the main guys, right, on top of the list. You know, writing to them, carefully constructed email, that plan of action that we talked about, incorporating the Amazon values, and then adding numbers into your messaging. So I like to say, like, you know, in my title, something like urgent, losing X amount of dollars per day based on restricted ASIN takedown, or have created 20 cases, no resolution. You know, things of that nature, very clear and concise titles. Then when you get into the body of the email, you want to provide all of your seller information, you know, your merchant token, your MID, your email address, point of contact. Make sure you have it clear there, right? This is me. This is my merchant ID. This is my seller name. And then you start your email. And in that email, you want to kind of highlight, like, hey guys, I've been selling on Amazon for X number of years. I generate X number of revenue per year. I'm up X percentage month over month or year over year. And this is a situation. So the problem is X. The solutions that I've tried to take are, you know, Y. You know, typically it's opening a bunch of cases. You would list all the cases that you opened, and then you would finally come down and you would conclude it with, hey, I'm looking for resolution. I cannot find it. I need assistance immediately, as soon as possible. Keep it respectful, of course. But really adding those details in to try to get them to take a customer-obsessed approach, because, like, at the end of the day, Amazon's losing out on a ton of sales and ASIN's down, right? And it's a popular ASIN. That can lead you to getting in touch with what's called a executive seller relations employee or associate. What happens is your email goes to Jeff. Jeff has an army of executive assistants, and they just all day go through his mailbox and they look for these escalated issues, and then they will feed the different escalated issues to the different departments, right? So in our case, if they see worthy enough a situation that needs to be looked at, or, you know, they'll feed it to the ESR team, Executive Seller Relations. ESR, it'll get put in a queue. They'll review the inquiries, the emails, and that time that they do see that it is a problem they need to address, they will reach out directly to you, generally the email, and they will create a case. The huge benefit of having somebody on the ESR team is that they are 100% autonomous. They can go between teams. They are not limited to a workflow that your average seller support agent is limited to. All your seller support agent is doing is going through a workflow and clicking on a decision tree to try to get your issue resolved. But these guys, they have knowledge, they have experience, they can talk to different teams depending on the situation, and they're very helpful, and they usually can get your issue resolved, right? I've dealt with them numerous times. I've learned a lot of good information about troubleshooting going forward from these folks. That's kind of like your Hail Mary, right? You definitely want to build a case. You don't want to start with ESR like, hey, ESR, I just tried to update my images and they're not working. No, you've got to like put some work in, right? You got to go through the escalation path, and you need to show Amazon everything you did in order to why you're at this point right now.
Yeah, this is valuable information. So you really have to sweat first, and you have to build a case or try several things, and then you can go back and say that these are the things I've tried, because the chances are they're going to tell you to try some of those things anyway. So you may as well do them first before reaching out.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's case by case, right? You certainly would want to try whatever you can to address the situation immediately first, right? You know, so if I have a restricted ASIN, all of a sudden I'm gonna go to that notification, I'm gonna look at it, I'm gonna see if I need to submit some sort of document, I'm gonna do that, right? Because I want to get the ball rolling on that, obviously. Like, I need to do a little bit of work. But if it is like a huge issue, like my account shut down, I had 20 ASINs and they all got shut down, and maybe it's just some weird back-end error, you know, tech issue that caused it, then sure, I'll write Jeff immediately. You know what I mean? Like, so I guess it's case by case, but oftentimes it's as a result of you not being able to get through to through the means of, you know, the normal means of getting your issues resolved, which is seller support, right? So yeah. I guess it is case by case. Sure, if it's a huge fire and you need to get somebody on the line, then certainly write Jeff and or Andy or both. Another thing is, you know, keep the email separate. I wouldn't include Jeff and Andy on the email. I'd write one email to each person.
There is another question. So I have seen some of my clients contacted by Amazon business development guys saying that, you know, I've been assigned to your account, blah, blah, blah. And then that's real valuable because now you have someone on the inside that you can call on. And if you
For
have
sure.
certain plans or certain requests, it's not necessarily a seller support issue, but it's something. What if you don't have someone and you do need help, not with any particular issue, but you are planning, you need someone on the inside. Is it possible to reach out and have a biz dev guy request a biz dev guy or somehow establish a relationship?
Yeah, good question. It's always good to get a guy, right?
Yeah.
Internally. And then those folks are generally promoting new opportunities that we can discuss and what's hot right now. But certainly having somebody internally on the inside can be very advantageous, right? They may not be within the realm of your issue, but if you've built a relationship, you've earned their trust. That's another Amazon principle. Then, they might go out of their way to help you with something that's sticky. I would recommend that sellers be on the lookout for emails that they receive directly from Amazon. So you will see, I don't know if some of your clients or, have seen emails from Amazon employees directly saying, "Hey, we think you're a good qualified fit for global expansion." So they're trying to pump European expansion right now. I've seen a lot of sellers getting inquiries about joining that initiative. So with that, you get invited. It's a an algorithm that's run on the background based on your sales data, what they think might be good in Europe, for example, in this scenario. Then you can get in touch with them and try to establish a relationship there, and then you have somebody that you might be able to lean on, even if you don't ultimately join the program. I would still talk with them, and I would still see what they have to offer. It's generally those programs are of no cost, so I've seen the push. So check out emails that you're receiving directly from an Amazon employee that has found you for some particular program. Another program, they're pushing Amazon Renewed, which is a service or a feature where you can get your own detail page. If you sell electronics, you can sell them as refurbished, right? So you can get account management there, and they can provide you with kind of like your own personal seller support agent to a degree where, you can lean on them for certain issues, right? That they're willing to help you out with. So a lot of it, yeah, it's invite only stuff. One of the biggest pushes I've seen, and it's depending on your website traffic, is Buy with Prime. That is a, I think the, from what I've heard, Andy Jassy is real hyped about it. Like, they are very hyped about Buy with Prime, if you know or your audience knows, but it's essentially putting a Buy with Prime button on your website, and essentially that'll be fulfilled via FBA. But you get to keep all of your customer data, which is the big win. It's kind of a win-win, right? You get the trusted purchase via
Yeah.
Amazon, but then you get to collect your own customer data. So they, have seen uptick in conversions on it, or at least that's what they pitch.
It's the old MFA, right? Yeah,
Yeah.
it's MCF, sorry, MCF, multi-channel fulfillment. So they came up with this nice widget that you can add to your website. So, I mean, getting to keep your customer data is not anything Amazon is doing. For God's sake, it's my customer already. It's come to my website. Of course, I'm going to have the customer data. But taking away that fulfillment burden from the website owner is a big deal. And what I really like about this is, other than the mechanics of it and the trust and the increase in conversion, of course, a lot of Prime members, they would want to do that. Is the centralized way of handling your inventory management. Because think about this, you have, whether you sell through Amazon only or you sell through multiple channels, there is one inventory that's going to service all those channels, right? So if you are allocating some to your website traffic, some to Amazon by sending it over to Amazon, and some for this, some for that, before you know it, you know, this is impossible to keep on an even keel where you always project the exact number. So you are either going to over ship or under ship to those fulfillment centers, or you're going to keep too much at home or at 3PL and then run out of stock at FBA just because you are trying to make sure that the website will have enough. All those out the window. No need anymore. Just make sure that you keep monitoring your FBA inventory and then keep replenishing it and then have the website orders and Amazon orders all fulfilled from one place. Just the sheer advantage of not having to have multiple systems to track how many pieces available here. If you have a huge inventory management system and you can track all that, that's fine, but not everybody is like that. So that part I liked very much. So it's a big deal. So what I'm hearing from you, my last question, what you are saying is there really is no way of getting out there and reaching out and finding an account person to be dealing. You have to be responding to their invite in some shape or form and then establish the relationship that way. That's what I'm hearing.
Yes. Correct. That medium where they contact you if you're qualified. If you're working with an agency, sometimes, you know, we can contact one of our own internal contacts and try to segue over if they haven't already contacted. So, like, for example, I had a client who was interested in going to Europe, but he hadn't received a contact from Amazon. I'm able to go and find an internal contact and segue them over. So via an agency is another option. The last option that I don't recommend is, there's two more options. The first one I don't recommend is SAS Corps, which is service. Can't remember. Do you remember what the acronym is?
It's what you pay Amazon for?
Exactly.
$6,500 a month?
Not worth it, man. No, don't do it.
Don't do it. Exactly. Yes. Yeah.
That's like, you know, buying a internal contact, but I've heard not many good things about it. I would stray away. If you want to invest $6,500, you know, go to an agency. Don't go to I find that to be little to no value. The other way that you can get like kind of like an internal contact, an internal rep established, would be if you are brand new to Amazon selling and you're like an already established brand and you make, I think maybe qualifications are at least one to 5 million at minimum, you know, and your other multi-channel like website, whatever, maybe you're hot on Instagram. You can get into a new seller success program, and it's kind of like an application where usually it's facilitated by an agency, but essentially those guys, you will get a dedicated account rep for 1 year for free. They're essentially the same thing as SAS Corps, the support team. They can help facilitate with issues and you know, provide guidance. But really, their job, in a nutshell, is to make sure that you're doing FBA, to make sure your listings look good, to make sure you're using FBA. But, like, you know, it's hit or miss. If you can get in touch with, folks. I guess another person, and actually, if you have a little bit of time, another program that you can actually get in touch with and get like an account manager would be the Transparency program. Are you familiar with Transparency?
Yeah, Transparency is serializing every single item, every single piece, not necessarily SKU, but at piece level.
Yeah, it's almost like a mini gate though to your item. So it's a way to gate other sellers from listing on your ASIN. So it's essentially a program you can enroll into, and you have to buy another label, but you can combine it with your FN SKU, and it's a QR code that validates authenticity. So when the buyer gets the product, they'll see enrolled in transparency. Scan this code. When they scan it, it'll say, "Hey, you just bought an authentic product from Pat Hannon. It came straight from his warehouse in Tucson, Arizona." So with that being said, nobody without those codes, if you're a seller, if you, Nick, want to sell my product, you don't have my transparency code that I have to generate, then your items in FBA are going to get sidelined and won't be put up for sale. But if I say, hey, Nick is a dealer of mine, I'm going to allow him to sell on Amazon. Essentially, I give him access and I provide him with the codes that I'm going to generate. You can slap it on your products, send it in, and you'll be able to list on my ISIN. So it's like kind of gating your own. So it's, with that being said, I think it's a great program. Like if you're a brand that's counterfeitable, or if you just want to try to gate your own listing, I think it's a great option. It's like 5 cents a label, but you will get a an account rep via them. I don't think the application process is hard, or I think they welcome just about anyone. I don't know if there's strict requirements, but hey, man, that's a way to get somebody on board.
You know what they say about buying a boat? The biggest expense, other than that it's a hole in the water, the biggest expense is not the purchase, but it's the maintenance.
Yep.
So these transparency codes, the biggest headache with them is managing them. Because first of all, you have to purchase them. They're going to issue, just like buying a UPC, buying another UPC, except this time imagine every single piece in your warehouse of that same SKU has a unique UPC. How are you going to label them? How are you going to manage what goes with what number? And that's the part that bothers the hell out of me. It's for, especially for smaller brands, they can hardly manage their inventory. They can hardly tell how many pieces they have in stock, let alone what transparency code was put onto what piece and blah, blah. And if you don't do it the right way, you can actually risk your inventory, because Amazon warehouse will reject inventory that doesn't have legitimate transparency codes on them if the listing is enrolled in the transparency program. So it's a dangerous thing. I would definitely recommend it for larger ones, established brands, which is, I think, what that's for. But for smaller ones looking to be big, it's too early to.
Well, you could make an ASIN, enroll that, and then just forget about the program. Have your internal guy that you establish trust with.
Yes, like that idea.
You get into the program. I mean, you don't have to necessarily go through with it. I like it.
You can have multiple ASINs and only some of them in transparency program and not all of them, right?
Correct. Yep. You enroll what you want to enroll.
Exactly. Yeah. But you will get the account executive. So
yeah, you will. And so you buddy buddy with them, you know, talk Amazonian, look up those leadership principles. It could be a benefit to you. Yeah, certainly some will go above and beyond, and some don't. You know, they're focused on getting their promotions, so you know they don't have time to deal with you. I joke, but it's true. Nonetheless, I guess a creative way. Outside of that, you gotta be invited. You have to know somebody from like an agency. I don't recommend SAS Corps. And then if you are a business that is somewhat established, making money already, you know, there is this new seller success program you can get enrolled to.
Well, you know, we can never go through enough of these, but we've running out of time. So let's get to know you a little bit. So I'm always fascinated by how these Amazonians go through life in terms of changing careers. So tell us, take us back to the beginning. Where did you grow up? And share with us some of your early life experiences that turned you into this Mr. Fix-It.
This wasn't on the intake, Nick. No. I don't want to go back to my childhood. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, everything comes from there, you know.
Yeah, it all starts there. Oh, man. Well, yeah, so, you know, we talk about Mr. Fix-It, right? I guess, you know, growing up in Tucson, Arizona, I grew up with my grandfather, mom, and a brother. And so my grandfather worked in construction, so he knew how to, he practically built the house. And so he was very capable in construction. I had a very close relationship with him. So the house was rather old by the time I came into the world. And as I grew up, I learned a lot about repair to the house as we had to maintain it. So I just grew, I don't know if that coalesced into my desire to troubleshoot, figure out things when it's come to my career. I've worked at a few different institutions like Intuit, Amazon. And so a lot of the time I was involved with projects and looking to improve those processes because, you know, a lot of things, as you know, don't operate as efficiently as they should. So, you know, I guess I always had an interest in trying to fix the problems that were present.
But, you know, what's interesting to me is, first of all, I mean, these companies, Amazon, we know it's a different culture, but companies like Intuit, so you worked in large companies. In large companies, they don't let you do anything, right? You get pigeonholed into something. How is it that they let you, you know, because there's no diploma or certificate or training for fixing things, right? So how did they let you make changes and fix things? So you must have developed some kind of trust. How did that happen?
I don't know. What's the saying where you do now and ask for forgiveness later or something?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
What is better, ask for permission or ask for forgiveness?
Yeah, that. So I'm usually just doing the thing and then hoping that the outcome was successful. Nonetheless, pigeonholed, I think, is a huge thing. And that's why working in a smaller company has been refreshing because you have a lot more flexibility and freedom to make changes, or at least act like a human, be a human, where you're kind of more of a cog in a greater system at some of these larger companies. I think, you know, if I relate back to the Amazon principles, right, earning the trust of your leadership, presenting solutions, you know, one of them is like being right a lot. So, you know, as you've identified problems over and over again, that's going to allow you a little bit more flexibility into trying to fix issues on your own, or gaining a little bit more autonomy. And I think Amazon has a very methodical approach to process improvements and fixing things or developing new systems via their, I don't know if you've heard of it, but it's like starting with a one pager, where you outline your plan of action, like the problem, you know, what the current state is, what the proposed future state looks like. And you start with the draft. It's one page, put it on paper, and then you get your team together to critique that paper. And then it grows into 3 pages, and then it grows into 7 pages. So I think, you know, obviously Amazon's pretty successful. When I think back about working at Amazon, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times. I got to travel, got to train worldwide, seller support agents. amazing opportunity to meet people, so many people, right? But, you know, it being very, I don't know the word, strict, cruel, inhumane.
Yeah.
No, just a very tough place to work at. The standards are pretty high, and if you don't meet those standards, then there's a problem. And you've seen stories in the news of folks, you know, that have had a lot of stress, PTSD working there, man. It's a good place to work, though. I mean, if you are looking for experience, you just have to navigate the waters accordingly. But yeah, it can be very stressful, and you're always, you know, they say raise the bar over there. So
right.
Yeah, you gotta raise the bar. I rose the bar, right? The bar doesn't get much higher. Like, how much more do you want to go? But that's capitalism, right? So nothing is ever like quite good enough, I would say, right? So, you know, it's a tough culture to survive in, and you work a lot of hours. The more you do, the more responsibilities you take on. So it can be a very stressful environment. But again, I had some really, really great experiences working there. So, and now here I am on the other side, the light, the not the dark side, the light side.
Well, you know, what happens is when people are suffering through a job, an assignment, or a mission, you know, if you are in the military, whatever, all those experiences, throughout those experiences, at the time you're doing it, you're complaining all the time.
Oh, yeah.
But after the fact, you always talk about those experiences with pride. So wear it as a badge of honor. So nobody talks badly after the fact. But at the time, it's hell and you're going through hell. And so I guess the only thing that you can do is, as Churchill said, you know the saying? So if you think you're going through hell, keep going. So I guess your grandfather did a great job on you. I mean, putting you in construction and then mentoring you is what gave you the foundation of figuring out what to do and
perhaps
a solution person, right?
Yeah, who knows, man? Maybe it all started there. You know, very, very enlightening.
Listen, you know, I'm not the expert at this, but I'm always into it. I have discussions and read and watch documentaries about the formation of the brain. And it's always 0 to 5 years.
Interesting, yeah. Huh. Yeah, maybe so. But yeah, I mean, that's been a passion of mine. I left Amazon and I just worked on my own and did handyman work for a few years and then got back in the game. So now I'm trying to help sellers, you know, I'm on my own accord and with the knowledge I've gained and knowing the way that Amazon operates and just keeping on top of, you know, the programs that are available. And you know, I always recommend check out the news section. I don't know if people read that news section in Seller Central, but always good to look there to try to keep on top of things. Because they're always releasing something, you know, every day. It's something new.
Yeah, exactly. You know. Yeah. So this is great conversation. I definitely learned myself after all these years. There's always something to learn. So tell us, how can people reach you? Share your contact information with us.
Yeah, so I can be reached on, you know, LinkedIn if you have any questions or if you want to share some Amazon war stories. You know, I'm welcome to that as well. So many stories out there, right? I think you're gonna post my LinkedIn, right? It's Patrick J. Hanna.
Yeah, we will put your LinkedIn address with your episode so people will be able to reach out.
Yeah.
Thank you, Pat. This was a great conversation, and I'm sure that people will put it to good use. Thank you.
Yeah, I hope so. Thank you very much, Nick. It was a pleasure. Had fun.
Before you go, make sure to sign up with Aarti and claim your lost revenue. Visit www.getaarti.com/legends to register. You will get 1 month free and experience Aarti's features. Sign up now at www.getaarti.com amazon.com/legends. Thank you. This brings us to the end of another episode, and I'll see you on the next one.
If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review the episode, and share it with someone you think would benefit from it too.